Greetings, everybody. My name is Eric Johnson. I'm here with my brother, Derek. Hey, Derek, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How about you?
Ready to go running into the fog again? What's our show today?
We have episode 57.
And who's our guest today?
You know, you do a far better job with our guest's last name. So I'm going to do the first name, wow. And you're going to do the last name. Let's do that together. Ready? Our guest today on episode 57 of Running Into the Fog is Raylene
Gagnon.
Did we nail that?
You absolutely nailed it. And I am so excited to be here, although I'm a little disappointed we can't do rose petals on live stream. I have to work on that for next time.
Well, we are excited you're here too, Raylene. It's been a long time coming, and I'm so glad Derek reached out to you and got you lined up. We're going to cover a whole lot of material here today, but before we do that, a quick little set of ground rules. This first half, we encourage everybody out there on social to scan the QR code that you're probably seeing on your screen and cut over to join us on the, and in fact, let me put that up here for a second. I need to start my other video and get that added to the spotlight. Then I can pause it. There we go. So all of you on social, scan that QR code and get on over to the bridge so you can join potentially as an interlocutor in the second half. We've got a bunch of interlocutor candidates out there on the webinar bridge who are going to be, we're going to turn Raylene over to them during the unspeakable half. This first half is called Unthinkable. We try and help you think things that you haven't thought before. And hopefully we bring you into some new territory from an intelligence standpoint. We've got a fantastic intelligence veteran and leader here with us today in Raylene. And so, Derek, I'm going to kick it to you for first question. We're going to have POAPs up for you to scan as well. So watch for that. You'll see everything happening here as we go. So, Derek, what are we going to talk with Raylene about today?
Well, let's really lean first, Raylene, into this whole notion that, you know, we go back many years, right? And in the true spirit of both my brother's shirt to attack life and the spirit of this podcast running into the fog together, a couple of months ago, you changed companies after a very, very long time at the previous company. So, you know, when you thought that through and you think even to this day about this transition period, you know, whenever you might change employers or leave a team that you love deeply and try to build friendships and partnerships with new teams, you know, talk a little bit for us about what that process has been like for you. And what I find ironic, maybe not so ironic, is that ever since we've known you, you've operated in this kind of total talent intelligence world. And, you know, when Magnet Global saw that you were interested and available, you know, that they went after that talent. And I guess I'd love for you to maybe get us started here on this podcast, talking about your journey, leaving a company that and a team that you love so much, and then how that transitions or translates, maybe is a better term, to that whole total talent intelligence realm that you operate in still to this day now at the new company.
Wow, it must be the flannel shirt. You went right for the Hallmark special tagline. So since we've known each other, I think when I first got introduced to you guys, I had just taken on a role at Manpower Group where I was able to centralize not just competitive intelligence, but the market intelligence and the business intelligence that went along with that. And after a lifelong career in CI, seeing that you could harness that competitive insight, combine it with the market intelligence and use the BI to measure that impact on a business, on a process or whatnot, it was a very powerful shift for me within the organization that I was working in. And I had the opportunity in that case to work with a lot of different types of people, all very inquisitive as you have to be in intelligence, but some more quantitative and some more qualitative in nature. And, you know, I spent over a decade with a tremendous team, and we made a great deal of progress and a lot of innovation in our industry. And so there was certainly no lack of momentum in the role that I was in. That said, there is so much for anyone that's joining us today. There is so much news in the headlines about what's happening from a workforce opportunity standpoint in the marketplace today. And you can't help but know that for anyone in any role, no matter how satisfied you are with a position, change is happening, and it's happening all around us. And either you're in a position where you might want to take advantage of higher earning potential, a shift in your focus, or just advancement in your career potential, those opportunities exist, but you have to be open to them. And so I think that's the first step, is either your tunnel vision in the role that you're in, or you're open to new opportunities. And, you know, I think there's so much noise in the market today around analytics, data analysis in particular, always being one of the top jobs in demand. And sometimes organizations and employers themselves forget that analysis and intelligence, two different things, right? There's the function of actually analyzing the data and developing the intelligence, but cultivating the intelligence, especially the qualitative kind that comes from the CI, you know, it takes a different skill set, and it's a different role in an organization if they've structured their business properly. So, you know, for me, I had the opportunity to step into a role that I had never envisioned would exist. And so in this particular case, it was having access and the ability to leverage all of the data in so many facets of the marketplace, the organization, et cetera, in order for there to be a singular view and a consistent perspective within the organization and within the market of what that data and what that intelligence could yield for our clients and our own business. I think it depends on where you sit in your career to determine whether or not you're really in the position to be open to those opportunities. For me, though, from a personal standpoint, I'll go Hallmark for you. You can never replace people, you know, and you can never really replace the role and the contributions you were making, but you always need to be ready to do what's best for you and your own development when you're ready to move on to that next step.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you. You nailed it. And, you know, Eric and I are old guys, and we're sort of stuck here to a certain extent. Not stuck in a bad way, but just like this is our thing. And like the, you know, we're stuck with each other, you know, brothers and business partners and other things. But, you know, the opportunities when they are presented to you, to your point, you oftentimes need to go kind of grab that and go get it, and, you know that those relationships that you've had for a long time are going to withstand a little bit of separation or the lack of the day-to-day, right?
I just want to say there is no stuck, because when I first met you, you were not doing a live stream and these podcasts, and, you know, you're on episode 57 of Running in the Fog, and you were in Asia when you first, you know, started to build out Aurora. So you've made so many changes and so many leaps. You just have the benefit of doing it together.
Yeah. Yeah. That's well said. As Derek said, attack life, like the shirt says. The subtitle is, it's going to kill you anyway. So why not? you better seize the brass ring, so to speak. And, you know, I think right now I'm so fascinated by the workforce dynamics, particularly here in the United States, that's going on. I'd love to get into whatever you're able to talk about with that, because the way I kind of read it is, we had what, 67 million people in the workforce, and about a million, apparently not all in the workforce, but we had about a million die from COVID, or with COVID at least. We had about 2 million who've had some long-term, long-haul COVID symptoms that have basically taken them out of the workforce. And you've got another couple million people who've got some other things going on that we're not quite sure what's happening, whether that's depression and from loneliness, you know, using chemicals to kind of get through their day, or doing whatever's going on with that other couple million. But by my accounting, we're down about 5 million in the workforce. Now, I don't know if that matches with what you're seeing. You're the data nerd behind all this. So enlighten us a little bit as to what's going on with the workforce, the size of the workforce, and how that's transforming really the expectations that business leaders and people of influence are going to have to cope with, not just for the next couple of years, but the next couple generations potentially.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, you did miss one segment of the market, because then there's my group, the group that just misses plastic straws.
All right.
So there are many different groups that have been impacted by things that have happened in the last few years, some less, you know, serious than others. You captured a number of the statistics, but you focused only on those that were leaving the workforce. Okay. Of all of those who died during COVID, both in the United States and globally, roughly 25% were of the working age population. So it wasn't entirely driven by those that were participating in the workforce at that time. It changes a little bit, you know, it ranges from 24.7 to 25.3. But depending on the market, you can really assume that a quarter of that mortality was impacting the workforce. Yeah. You had people retiring early. In the United States, we had in 2019, 10,000 people retiring daily. And that's up over 10,800 now, because it has become easier to just step away than to try and continue to combat what being in the workforce means today, whether that's commuting or dealing with certain schedules or certain requirements. So there's certainly that piece. There's certainly people that for health reasons have chosen to remove themselves from the traditional work model. There's also those that have decided, I'm not ready to leave the workforce. I just don't want to work for someone else. So in the United States, there's been, I think, a 30% increase in those that have decided to become self-employed or simply rely on Uber Eats and DoorDash and driving or doing some sort of gig work. And around the world, those statistics vary, but there's a portion that have just decided to go out on their own. And if they're going out on their own, they're not willing to work for any of us. So they have shifted. And then there's those that have decided they don't want to enter at all. There's people that were about to enter college or about to leave college and just sort of paused. And now they don't know what to do or where to go next. So there's all of that. And what that has done is that has diminished the supply. We've also seen, though, new jobs emerge. And so for certain functions and certain jobs, it's actually become more difficult to source talent. And you know, I'll use manufacturing as an example. Traditionally, you were looking for someone who either had experience or had the capability to come in and was willing to work certain shifts and had the physical ability to either stand for a certain amount of time or lift a certain amount or the attention to detail to go through certain quality steps. So depending on the role in a manufacturing line, there were some level of requirements, but the biggest one was you needed to show up and be present on that line. Now we have this whole burgeoning industry that warehouse existed, but with the boom in e-commerce and with the shift in online retailing, warehouse has exploded. And now warehouse, well, you know, there's slightly less requirements. The shifts can be shorter. You can choose which shifts you want to work. You can only lift lighter boxes if you can't lift the heavier boxes. You can control the robots if you can't lift any boxes. You have so many more options. And if you can't speak the language, there's a lot of enablement for that, more on the warehouse side than on the production side because of different OSHA standards. So we've seen sort of that spread, and it's the same workforce population that has shrunk, but now there's almost twice as much demand as there was pre-pandemic. And then we've seen declining requirements across the board in other areas. If you're going to be in customer service, but you don't need to be in an office, suddenly the attire that you wear is no longer a requirement. So there's no income level that requires you have fancy clothes, and you don't necessarily need to have a car to be able to commute into said call center, but you can speak and have interpersonal skills and be able to support those phone calls. So now telemarketing, customer service, those things that have gone virtual can tap into that talent. So not only is there a smaller workforce than there was, but the demand has grown and it has changed and requirements have shifted. Some organizations are recognizing that for certain types of skills, they are no longer have candidates been following the path of higher education, or no longer have candidates gone through X, Y, and Z roles in order to be qualified for this new role. People are just jumping and skipping steps left and right, depending on the market and the opportunity, and everyone's become more flexible. But as bigger organizations struggle to shift with that, people may want to be more flexible, but organizations have policies. So sometimes organizations haven't caught up with where some of their managers and some of their hiring needs need to be. The challenge is we are moving faster. Technical enablement, robotics, automation, manufacturing, machine learning, that does not reduce the number of people that we need. It changes the level of skill that we need in the workforce. And we right now are seeing an increasing gap in the amount of talent that's available. It's still going down in the job demand that we have going up for specific skills. So we're probably 5 years out before they even start to go in the same direction. Huh. In that same 5 years, we're about to see, you said generations earlier, the baby boomers just sort of leave the workforce, that early retirement, the aging out, the various health factors. So the age, the average age of our workforce is shifting. And the priorities of those workers mean you need new total rewards. You need new benefits packages. You need to redefine what your employee value proposition is. And frankly, companies are scrambling. They're so busy trying to backfill positions of people who are leaving and hire the people they need. They're scrambling to proactively think ahead to what they need in the future. And I think that that is indicative of how important this workforce challenge is going to be and is going to continue to be moving forward. I'm a realtor, so time me if you need me to stop.
No, that was all fantastically insightful. And you taught me a lot there, really, as you usually do. I think, you know, what you're kind of, and if I can sum it up a little bit, I'll say that there were a lot of trends that were already afoot that the pandemic merely solidified, accelerated, affected in some other way. It wasn't the pandemic to blame. It was the pandemic as a catalyst that supercharged all of these things that were already happening.
That's 100% accurate. Yes.
Awesome. I want to encourage our audience quick as Derek's coming up with a question for you. I can see it in his eyes. Audience, if you have questions, get them into the chat. We'll try and get those addressed to Raylene here as we go. If you are brave enough, you can join as an interlocutor as Terry Thiel volunteered to do here. And Terry's going to be our first interlocutor. Terry, you're going to love Raylene. Raylene, you're going to love Terry if you don't know each other. Derek, I'll pass it to you once I've encouraged our audience here.
Yeah, that's a good segue. I was just about to say, I can't wait for Terry to come on, having been the author of this book, Our Fourth Age, because I think it's going to, you both are going to have a really interesting 10 or so minute jam session together. My question to you, Raylene, next question is, and I think I know where you stand on this, but I want to ask it anyway. You know, you talk about data. I call it data. You with your lovely Boston accent, I do just love it. I mean, it's just so distinct. You know, when you think about the role of data and analysis in comparison to the value created through really strong human intelligence, talk to us a little bit about your opinion on and perspectives on that. And coming at it from the standpoint that, you know, you can't do really one without the other. And it's kind of like peanut butter and jelly. In a sense, at least that's the kind of the way I think about it. You need one to do the other one well and vice versa. But how do you separate the two, you know, data and analysis of the data from the value that can be created through strong ethical human? Can you describe for us what you've seen in your time, both at Magnet Manpower and prior to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say data because that's how it flows off my tongue. I think there's a lot of different examples, and depending on the topic, the impact of data versus insight is going to be different. But since we're on that workforce trend and it's my passion, you know, think about the headlines we're seeing today. And I'm not going to call out any specific executives who recently took over companies and did major layoffs, but there are a lot of headlines that are highlighting very large numbers. And if we look across the year, you know, just in the past 2 months, we have seen a significant amount of layoffs that are almost equal to the total amount of layoffs in the tech sector during 2020. And so it's something that if you're just looking at the numbers, you may think, well, the tech industry is the first to be impacted by the recession. You know, all of these layoffs are happening. And it's across all of these functions. And we're seeing it across not just Silicon Valley, but in these other areas as well. But if you actually dive into the individual companies, you'll find that some of them are going through different organizational restructuring because they've made acquisitions. Some are going through different restructuring initiatives because they are offboarding or shifting priorities in parts of their business, or they've become aware that they need to reinvest in a different area and are changing their marketing or technology investment priorities. And you need that intelligence, that deeper level of insight, which comes from either competitive insight or market insight, to understand what's driving those numbers. And too often, organizations and so-called subject matter experts get caught up in the numbers themselves. And to me, data is numbers, right? And if you don't understand the root cause of those numbers and how those numbers correlate to one another and what the ultimate impact of those numbers are going to be, have you really offered any intelligence to the conversation?
Yeah, I think that's really well said, you know, understanding that root cause, exactly like you said, of what's driving it. So I think I got the answer I was expecting.
Well, I hope so. I didn't want to disappoint you.
Eric, what other questions do you have for Raylene?
I have a question. I was encouraging you actually in the chat to take Jim's question. Jim Miller had a question for you, Raylene, and I'm going to read it out here. Jim asks, how does the education system keep up to the changing demands of employers? How do we encourage more collaboration between employers, educators, and employees and learners?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, Jim. I think that there is no one best practice that has emerged that all universities or even community colleges and trade schools have been able to adapt and agree on. Depending on the market, there has been so many different levels of investment. And since many folks that are on this are, you know, say in the Midwest right now, I'll use some of those local areas as an example. You have very tight alliances between the universities in Wisconsin, and, you know, you have various technology alliances within the community that are tied to not just the higher education market, but the trade schools themselves, and are reaching out not only to children that are in early stages of learning, but to the communities and to parents who can influence the direction of their children's growth. Some communities are successfully doing that across the country and across the globe, but in other cases, there's a gap. And part of what is going to make that a challenge moving forward is all of the remote hiring. So if you've got companies in California or Boston hiring in the Midwest, they're not in tight alignment with the local universities and schools. They're in fact not necessarily even committed to the Midwest. They're willing to hire in the Midwest, in the Southeast, in the Northwest. And so it's almost impossible for companies, if they're not strategic in their remote strategies, to get those relationships in place and to build them in such a way that they can create a funnel. And we've seen this successfully done for years. This is not new. I mean, going back to the BlackBerry, Research in Motion partnered with the University of Waterloo, and that's how they fed the engineering needs that they had in Canada. And we see that on and on, but it's only if a company is tied to a market and is committed to investing in certain schools. No organization has the ability to invest in all of the schools. So unless a higher power organization or consortium exists to get all of private sector aligned to education, it's always going to be one-off. And that's the only way that we're going to see progress.
Eric, I'm happy to take Kurt's question in here. Thank you for taking Jim's question, really. Kurt Hallbeck, who I think you've actually met at a Reconverge.
I have.
Kurt writes, with a couple of years of significant remote work experience under our belts, are there any overall insights you can share on the collective experience of employers and employees? Realizing, of course, there's a lot of situational differences between employer to employer, but just curious on what you've seen and learned.
Oh my God, we could talk for a whole hour just about that. So, I mean, some people have just taken to it like a duck to water, right? They now they can be productive. They can balance their lives. They're never going back. Others have found themselves frustrated being at home. There's a personal aspect to it. But for some, we've seen recently, I don't know if anyone saw headlines, companies like Experian finding people that are moonlighting and taking other jobs. You know, you got two computers set up, you can work full-time for two companies at once while you're at home. And for me, that speaks to an opportunity for employers to tap into that. I mean, think about it, step back. Companies have a talent shortage. That's where we started our conversation. If you have people working for you today who are not busy and are not being paid enough, and they're willing to work full-time for someone else concurrently, so simultaneously while they are working for you, I say that means they are worthy of being evaluated for a different job that will pay more within your organization. So instead of penalizing people for trying to find new ways to earn income and fill their time, we should be finding ways as employers to fill their time and fill their pockets with what they're earning as an opportunity. From an employer standpoint, it has become convoluted. We see labor laws changing. So pay transparency is all over between New York, California, and others. Been ongoing for years, and actually have a webinar tomorrow just focused on this. But from an employer standpoint, if you're going to hire remotely, you need to be very, very clear on what you're willing to pay anyone filling this position, no matter where in the country they are. Because some of these states are now requiring that you publish what that hourly wage or what that annual salary will be. And you can't say anywhere remotely except for Washington or anywhere remotely except for New York, because now you're hiring with prejudice and you're excluding people unfairly from consideration. So there's ultimately going to be a need for every employer, if they're hiring remotely, to have a very clear view of what their wages need to be and to publicize those, so that good news for people looking for remote work, you don't even have to go through the interview process to compare job opportunities. You'll know right away what company I want to pursue. So there's a lot of wins for people. There's a lot of opportunity for employers if they put the right strategy and use the right intelligence to drive that strategy.
I find that whole second full-time job thing just hilarious.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Well, think of jobs, not that, you know, your current or recent employer didn't keep you busy, but we've all had jobs like that where you're just kind of sitting around waiting for something to happen. I mean,
It was the music store I worked in high school. And every time Mariah Carey started coming on with the Christmas songs, everyone left. And so I had to sit around and wait for customers to come back in. That was the last time I was bored.
I believe it. Wow. That is fascinating though. And, you know, isn't that what independent contractors and freelancers do anyway? You know, isn't it sort of, boy, I've got this customer that I'm delivering value for. They don't keep me busy 100% or even 50%. So why not get a second client, you know?
For some, especially if they're freelancers, for many that are agency workers, those contractors that are going through staffing agencies, historically, most of those positions have been on site. It's only recently that a lot of those have shifted off site. And then now, you know, as long as they're getting the work done and you're paying for the hours they're working, you know, they have the ability to allocate the rest of their time elsewhere because you own them for the assignment and not for their entire working life. Yeah. There's a lot of gray area. And I think that if not legally, ethically, and just culturally, we're going to have to come to some new accord as employers and people. And today, frankly, with the turnover being what it is and with hiring demand being what it is, people need to make decisions, you know, and not be indecisive. It's not about waiting to see what someone's going to offer you. What do you want? Now go after that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
That's where I got myself to that point in what Raylene was talking about, the simultaneous two full-time jobs that you're kind of balancing, mode switching between. That to me, even if you can make that work, you know, it's quite a, probably an ethical dilemma and a moral dilemma in terms of whether or not that's the right thing to do. I don't know.
Well, depending on industry and competition, I mean, there's a risk of IP. There's, you know, a number of factors that come into play. So all of that matters.
Yep.
Awesome. I think it's good that you guys are focused on the same exact path, though, because otherwise it would be an awkward Thanksgiving dinner, no?
Our wives are actually funny about that anyway. We have some policies that when we're together in non-work settings, like there's only a certain very small proportion of quote-unquote work discussion.
At the stands of time that they flip over.
Yep.
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about business anymore at family gatherings because it's so boring to everyone else at the table. Mostly that reason. Or we get into stuff that's super elaborate and they just don't care. They lose interest and go off and play video games. But thank you, by the way. Jim, thanks you. Awesome Waterloo reference. Kurt loved your example there with the two full-time jobs. So tell me a little more about how the magnet work differs from your work at Manpower, to whatever extent you can. I'm super curious about that. And then one more encouragement for our audience. Social folks, we're going to be cutting you off here in about 1 minute. We're going to say Das Vidanya to the Russian botnets and see you next time. And so if you're not on the bridge by then, it's hopeless. You better be on the bridge. We do have two more interlocutor slots available for the second half. So we're going to turn you over to Terry here in about 2 minutes, but go into a little bit of the difference between, you know, what's the biggest difference now for you, I guess. Maybe focus on the biggest difference.
I mean, the biggest difference for me is in the role itself. So for me, it wasn't just an opportunity to explore more robust data. It was also around the role and being able to influence how data was being leveraged across the entire organization from an operational standpoint. So just the opportunity for me to work with more analysts that were driving the direction and specific insights related to all of the things that we're talking about. Where is the gap? Where is the opportunity in the changing demand and the focus on skills more than jobs in the future state? How are these things impacting the financial sector more than the manufacturing sector? For me, it's about having the ability to work with more resources who would have the ability to use this data in more ways that could be amplified across our business and as well as our clients, you know, not being restricted by brands or markets and whatnot. So it was definitely a personal growth and a professional growth opportunity for me.
Super cool. So for those of you on social, if you haven't cut over by now, it's too late. We're going to say goodbye. Zaijian to the Chungguo botnets that I don't quite yet know how to say in Mandarin, but we'll learn that for next time. Thank you, Raylene, for pointing out the gap in my skill set there.